We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Big thanks again to our man, Teron Davenport of ESPN, joining us last segment to talk some Titans who are sticking in the division, the AFC South. And my next guest joining me on the Wester Hotline is Zach Hicks. He's the lead analyst over at SI Colts. He's a contributor over with my boys at Cover One, and he joins me again here on the Wester Hotline. Zach, good afternoon to you, my friend. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
No, my pleasure. I'm glad we're finally getting to do this, and I think it's a great time because it's that part of the offseason where kind of looking in this conference, which is just a loaded conference full of teams that I think all have maybe a claim. I mean, there are six, maybe seven teams that could all claim to say, like, hey, we're a contender. And I think the Colts are right there in that conversation, and obviously a team that I thought was a play or two away from potentially stealing that game in Buffalo in the wild card game last year. Zach, I wanted to kind of start with you, and one of the reasons I had you on is some of the film work you were doing this week on Carson Wentz, talking about areas of where you think you can find some improvement in his game and things he could be potentially working on. I want to start with Wentz because I think he's sort of the end-all be-all for this team. Now, this is a team that got to the wild card round last year, a team that I thought was very competitive with a quarterback that, let's just face it, did not have the juice left in that arm. With a quarterback with plenty of juice in the arm, are you expecting this offense in the team in general to take a step this year, knowing that the division also got a little bit more competitive with, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville, and obviously just talking with Teron and getting Julio Jones in Tennessee? Is this a team, and particularly an offense, that's sort of ready to take the next step with a quarterback that I think a lot of people are probably doubting?
Yeah, you know, I think they can take that next step. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, set in stone by any means because, like you said, Phillip Rivers definitely didn't have that juice. He couldn't really stretch the ball down the field, and it did limit parts of their offense. But, you know, it's not like Phillip Rivers played horribly last year or poor at all. You know, he finished last year 12th in DVOA. He was sixth in EPA per play. He had a really strong year for the Colts, and part of that is the Colts system and the players the Colts put around him. But you know, his accuracy in the short game, his just ability to diagnose what's going on pre snap. I thought Phillip Rivers was excellent last year for a guy with no juice, and saying, you know, outright that the guy who was 34th ranked in DVOA last year and has had steady regression for 4 years is going to be better than that. You know, that's something that I've been struggling with, and something that I've kind of focused on with my studies this whole offseason is what are some good things, what are some bad things with Carson Wentz. And I think the biggest thing I've come to is, you know, obviously the scheme and the players around him are going to be much better than what he had last year, and that could go a long way. Mm-hmm. But he really needs to take positive strides with his mechanics, with his short accuracy, with his ability to get the ball out, you know, in rhithm and underneath. You know, his deep ball is still pretty good. It's been pretty good the last couple of years, even with this regression. And I think that we're going to see the Colts offense be more explosive this year. But what we really need to see him is take those strides underneath, where, you know, an area where Phillip Rivers was outstanding, and why the Colts were in that game with the Bills last year in the playoffs. Those are some areas that Carson Wentz needs to get better. So, you know, I want to say that they're going to be much better on offense or more explosive on offense, but we really got to see it with Carson Wentz because, like I said, it's been, you know, 4 years now with steady regression, and last year it definitely hit its peak where, you know, the team was awful around him, but he was not good by any means.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Benjamin Solak, and I mean, he's done over the last couple of years a lot of work on Carson Wentz, a lot of film work, a lot of breaking down, and one of the things that, you know, he sort of has mentioned is his inability to, with regularity and in smart situations, dump the ball down, use the running back in the passing game, throw the ball with anticipation, and throw the ball to lead receivers on short crossing routes. Those are areas of the field he's really struggled with. And those are the sort of throws, Zach, that are those layups, those opportunities to get 10 or 15 yards, get some yards after catch. Those are easy drive starters that over the last couple of years, Carson Wentz has really struggled with. And when you're talking about a backfield, by the way, that is maybe one of the best and maybe most diverse pass-catching backfields in all the league, this is a guy that's got to turn that part of his game around, right? I mean, they've got to be able to utilize the running backs they have in the backfield because they've got plenty of them, and all of them bring a different dynamic in the pass game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, speaking of those underneath route stuff, yeah, Ben does a great job. I follow his stuff, obviously, and I've known him for years. I've talked to him a lot about Carson Wentz recently. And I always think the funniest thing that he put out there, which what I think was confirmed by Sports Info Solutions, was that Carson Wentz only threw eight passes to drag routes last year. And I'm going through and charting all the pass catches by each Colts receiver last year. And the number one caught pass, the number one targeted pass for both Michael Pittman Jr. and Zach Pascal last season was the drag route. Michael Pittman Jr. last year had, I believe it was like 9 catches on drag routes last year, and Carson Wentz only threw 8. last year for the whole year for the Eagles. So it's crazy. You know, those underneath passes are a huge part of the Colts offense. You know, Frank Reich has a lot of, you know, he obviously learned under Tom Moore, like when he was really becoming a coach, and then Ken Wisenhunt when he was in with the Chargers, and then also some Doug Peterson, Andy Reid type stuff with the Eagles. And a lot of what, you know, he learned over the years was that run after catch ability. That's why they brought in guys like Michael Pittman Jr., Nyheim Hines, Paris Campbell. You know, they love that run after catch. And if Carson Wentz can't get the ball to his guys underneath and allow them to run after catch, that's going to be a real issue because that's a big part of Frank Reich's offense. So that's really the biggest thing that we really just have to focus on early in the year is, you know, if the Colts are going to be a contender, Carson Wentz needs to be better in that area than what he's been the last couple of seasons.
Zach, I'm glad you kind of brought up Michael Pittman Jr., Paris Campbell. If you are looking at this offense, considering who's going to be at the helm, maybe this answer changes if Phillip Rivers is the quarterback again this year. Who is wide receiver one? Like, for me, it looked, especially in that game against the Bills, it looked like Michael Pittman Jr. was sort of planting the flag in the dirt and saying, like, next year, the future is kind of now, I'm going to be the alpha in this wide receiver room. I'm going to be the wide receiver one moving forward. And if I don't know if you believe that or if you agree with that statement. And if you do, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether or not that might be a different, you might have a different answer based on if Phillip Rivers or Carson Wentz is the quarterback.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because I think we kind of know what the roles and where guys are going to be position-wise. You know, we know Michael Pittman Jr. is going to be that X receiver. T.Y. Hilton is going to be the Z. Paris Campbell, if he's healthy, is going to be the slot. If he's not healthy, it's going to be Zach Pascal. That's kind of where these guys are going to be. But from there, it's kind of tough to say who's going to get the most targets, who's going to be the guy, because the Colts, you know, they love to spread the ball around. I mean, they're leading pass catcher last year with Nyheim Hines in terms of receptions. Then after that, you know, T.Y. Hilton was really close behind. Michael Pittman Jr. was close. Zach Pascal. So they like to spread the ball around. So it's tough to say a true number one receiver. You know, in a perfect world, it's Michael Pittman Jr., but I feel like he's going to be a lot of those underneath routes and stuff like that. So, again, that kind of goes back, will Carson target those underneath routes? And I think the biggest, I don't want to say like area they're missing, or the biggest question for me when I look at this offense is who's going to be that vertical threat? That's a thing that Carson Wentz has always had. You know, he's had DeSean Jackson, he's had Nelson Aguilar, Torrey Smith a little bit back in 2017. You know, guys who can get down the field. Is that T.Y. Hilton, even though he's kind of lost a little bit over the years? Is that Paris Campbell, who had like the lowest ADOT in the history of, you know, draft prospects a couple years ago? Is he going to become a vertical threat? Are they going to send Michael Pittman Jr. down the field, even though his whole rookie season was underneath? I think that's going to be a big thing to watch early in the season. But, you know, I think if we're looking at wide receiver one, I think, you know, they have to convert you know, get a conversion or something like that, who's the guy they're going to? I think either Pittman Jr. or T.Y. Hilton would be that guy this year. But, yeah, with Phillip Rivers, I would say almost certainly that it would be Pittman Jr. or Paris Campbell, because those underneath passes and the run after catch. But with Carson Wentz, I think whoever emerges as someone who can win down the field or win in that deeper intermediate route area, I think that's going to be a guy who really starts winning favor, and or maybe even tight ends, you know? Carson Wentz loves those tight ends.
I is kind of my next question for you. Like, I, you know, and I wonder if, you know, at least what we're familiar with Carson Wentz is, right, is having those two tight ends, having a lot of 12 and 13 personnel on the field. I don't get the feeling that that is, like, maybe what Frank Reich is going to try to recreate. So if he's not going to try to recreate a lot of multiple tight end sets on the field, I mean, and maybe did they bring back Mo Ali Cox?
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
okay,
Ali Cox, they got Doyle, and they drafted Kylan Granson out of SMU.
Okay, so let's say, just for the sake of argument, that they just don't really have the guns to really throw at a lot of multiple tight end sets. Do you expect then for a guy that struggles, or maybe it's not less struggling and less, I don't want to say ability. What's the word I'm looking for here? Maybe it's just a willingness to use the running back in the pass game in Philadelphia. Do you think now that he's got the weapons in that backfield, and knowing that the head coach and Frank Reich likes to use those running backs, and you mentioned Nyheim Hines being the team's leading receiver last year, do you expect like Hines to still have that big role in the passing game with, you know, it's the room itself, getting Marlon Mack back? Like, it's crowded in there, man. Like, is Nyheim Hines still going to be on route to be this team, like, really in the picture as one of this team's primary pass catchers?
Man, I hope. I hope Nyheim Hines is a big part of this offense going forward. I think it's kind of a bummer, because overshadowed by Jonathan Taylor's explosion late last season was the emergence of Nyheim Hines, not only as a pass catcher, but also as a running back, as a pure runner and a running back. People talk about, I believe, Jonathan Taylor, and these are going have to be fat checked, but I believe Jonathan Taylor had over 5 yards of carry throughout the last 6 weeks of last season, including the playoffs, which is outstanding. But I believe Nyheim Hines was over like 8 yards of carry in those last.
As a fantasy owner of Nyheim Hines, who is starting him in RB1 positions almost exclusively towards the end of the season and into the playoffs, I mean, what he was doing was unbelievable. And on what? At most 10 to 12 touches a game? Like, not a lot of touches.
Yeah.
He was very efficient.
Yeah. Very efficient. And that's the best thing with him. You know, his first 2 years in the NFL, it was like 3.8, 3.9 yards of carry. And then the last year, he exploded up to 4.8. And he had, I believe it was 18% of his carries went for over 10 yards last year. Just a really good running back. And he really has improved not only as a pass catcher, but as a pure runner. And I think even with the signing of Marlon Mack, I do think Nyheim Hines should be the running back too this year and get those secondary running back carries. But we'll have to see how it all plays out. Obviously, I know that the Colts are really, really high on Marlon Mack. I'm a little scared of that Achilles injury. It's kind of the death to running backs is kind of what that injury is. So I'm kind of a little nervous to see what he comes back as. But honestly, man, with the way Nyheim Hines played last year and the way he was catching the ball and running the ball, I hope he's a heavy, heavy part of this offense going forward.
Zach Hicks here on the Wester Hotline. He covers the Colts for SI and for Cover One. Zach, you know, I think the defensive side of the ball is another really interesting it's an interesting part of the conversation around the Colts, right? And, you know, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago now, going out and trading for DeForest Buckner was a really big move for this team in solidifying that front seven. Is this a defense that you believe is, you know, right? I thought they did a good job at times containing Josh Allen, but when it mattered, I thought Josh Allen was sort of able to get the best of that Colts defense. Is the pass rush where it needs to be going into the season, considering the quarterbacks in this conference?
I don't think for 2021 it will be. I think 2022 is the year we'll see, hopefully, you know, big returns on this pass rush. Because when you're looking at the pass rush, you know, they let DeNico Autry and they let Justin Houston go. And people who just look at the raw stats would be like, oh, you let guys go who each had 8 sacks last year, or 9 sacks, whatever it was. So people think that's a huge loss. But, you know, we saw in that game against the Bills, you know, the Colts were getting no edge rush pressure whatsoever. Those two guys just didn't have enough juice for today's NFL to get constant pressure. And if you look at it, I believe it was like pressure percentages or quarterback hits and stuff like that. And neither of those guys were in the top 50 among edge rushers last year. So it's just – they were getting the sacks. They weren't really getting constant pressure, and the Colts knew they had to move on from that. Now this year, you know, they have guys going into big seasons. You know, Kamoko Ture, Ben Banigou really need to step up and show something for this team. And then they drafted two guys in Kwity Paye and Dio Odeyinbo. And, you know, I those two players are both great prospects, and I think ultimately they're going to be really good players for this team. But, you know, rookie pass rushers, both were raw guys in college as well. I don't know how big their impact is going to be in 2021. You know, we might see more pressures. I don't know if we're going to see it consistently from game to game. But I do think ultimately moving on from those two aging pass rushers for Kwity and Dio, I think that was a great move. It's just 2021, I don't know how much of an upgrade that's going to be from last year. But, you know, if you're looking at it, last year, again, they were one of the worst teams in terms of pressure percentage off the edge and getting that constant pass rush, and they were still the eighth overall ranked defense for DVOA, I believe. So, you know, they were still able to be productive without a great pass rush last year, so I still think they can be productive in 2021. But I think we won't really see the benefits of this decision until, like, 2022 when those players have some experience and some playing time under their belt.
So I kind of just to wrap things up on the Colts here, and I think part of the conversation around the Colts, Zach, is a conversation about the Tennessee Titans too. And, you know, I'm wondering what your thoughts of their move for Julio Jones, I think, right now in June, I think is probably receiving the right amount of conversations around it. It's moves happen in June, you know, other than a couple of post-June first moves. I before I even get there, I mean, I actually want to ask you this question first. Thinking about post-June first moves has sort of moved my thought process into this question, which is the Bills and Colts have been most talked about as the teams that are trying or going after or potentially in the mix for Zach Ertz. Mm-hmm. If it's your decision, Zach, are you the kind of guy that says at this point in his career, let the Bills have Zach Ertz, or are you saying I would love nothing more than to put Zach Ertz in this lineup knowing what Carson Wentz and his familiarity with him, and I think what Ertz's familiarity will be with the system already. Like, is that a move that makes a lot of sense for you?
If Zach Ertz were a free agent, I'd be all for it. I'd be fine for it. But trading assets for him, after all the film I've watched on Carson Wentz the last couple of days, which included me seeing a lot of Zach Ertz, no, I wouldn't want to trade assets for him. I think Zach Ertz is great at for who he is. You know, he's not the tight end who's going to win vertically with great explosion and juice and bursts and all that. I think he's a great leverage tight end. He's great at using his leverage to create space and get open. And obviously some parts of his issues have been, you know, Carson Wentz missing him a lot, and that's been just a big disjointment of that whole offense. But, you know, ultimately I just see, you know, you have Jack Doyle, who's a great blocker and pass catcher, who you'd probably have to move on from if you brought in Ertz. Mm-hmm. You have Marley Cox, who's a bit younger, who's a really good pass blocker and can be a good pass catcher. And then he just drafted a guy in the fourth round. I just don't see the fit with Zach Ertz, especially with kind of his decline in play the last couple of years. And honestly, one thing I'm kind of nervous about when I watch this film is there's a lot of easy drops. From what I saw. I don't know what the advanced stats are, because, again, he wasn't really the focus of my studies, but I was watching all of Carson Wentz's incompletions over the last 2 years, studies mechanics, and, man, there's a lot of plays where it just bounces off his hands, third down, fourth down. Like, I don't know. I'm not a huge, huge fan of it, and, again, I like my tight ends to have a little bit more juice if I'm going to go get a receiving option only. And the Colts have two great blocking tight ends, and they have one who's, you know, promising in the fourth round. So, you know, if he was a free agent, sure, I'd look into it just for the relationship with Reich and this offense, but I wouldn't trade real assets for him if I were the Colts. You know, I think he'd fit much better with the Bills and kind of needing a veteran guy who can use that leverage to get open.
So I guess that will lead me to the question I was about to ask you, which is about the Titans. Are you like, you know, thinking to yourself right now, the Titans, the move for Julio Jones puts them in a position to not only maybe be the front runner for the division, but maybe a team that now is giving themselves like Super Bowl conversations?
You know, I can, for sure. And I think one thing that I've noticed with Colts fans, you know, Colts fans are kind of hating on the move a little bit. And you know, I always say fandom's kind of a drug that people can't quit. You know, you always, as a fan, you always look through your fan goggles and see the negatives of all your teams, other teams in the division, and all the positives of your own team. And I don't think people are realizing how big a move it is. You know, Julio Jones is a top-tier receiver, like upper echelon, one of the best receivers in football. He's not injury prone. He's had one bat. He's had one season of injuries. He hasn't missed more than two games the last 6 years outside of last year. He's not an injury prone receiver. He's a top tier player in the league. So it is a big move. But ultimately, you know, I think they can make a run as long as that defense bounces back and has at least a decent year. But when I look at it from a Colts perspective, when I look at the Titans, I know I've kind of sound a little negative on here about the Colts, but all I really care about this season in 2021 is if Carson Wentz isn't broken and the young pass rushers show some positive, you know, development for the future. 2021, I think they can be a good team, be a playoff team even, but I feel like their Super Bowl window, their contender window really opens up next year. And to get to that point, we just need Carson Wentz to show that he can improve and not be what he was last year and these young pass rushers to step up. So, yeah, the Titans is a big move, and I think they can definitely win the division and probably are the favorites. But as a Colts fan, it's not really something that I'm too worried about because I'm kind of focusing on other things with this team this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Zach, thanks so much, man. Let's do this again. Obviously, you know, I think the Colts and Bills are in really interesting, unique waters right now heading into this season. And well, I'd love to have you back on. Continue doing great work over there, man. Big fan, and we'll definitely talk again soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Love it. Yeah, Bills, you know, closeted Bills fan here. Sean McDermott was, when I was covering Washington a couple years ago back in 2017 or whatever it was, Sean McDermott was like by far and away my top head coach choice for a couple years. Loved him, and you know the Bills hired him, and the rest is history. So yeah, huge fan of the Bills, and love what they're going there. Josh Allen also is a guy who I feel like I was higher on than most because I actually would have taken him in the first round that year. So yeah, man, big fan of everything the Bills are doing there. And even though it was bittersweet to see the Colts lose them in the playoffs, you know, I was excited to see them moving on.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously with Allen this year, the conversations around Allen are really intriguing and where this offense goes. Can they be better? The fact that they get Brian Daboll back. There's a lot of great storylines. Again, I think what it just goes to show you is how deep the AFC is. You could go through 6, 7, 8 teams and say, hey, I mean, here's my argument that they are a Super Bowl contender. And I don't think you could be wrong trying to say that, you know, the Colts, the Titans, the Ravens, the Browns, like these are teams, and obviously the AFC West, if Teddy Bridgewater can be just, if he could just make completions and not throw to the other team, like that's a team that you could convince me they could beat Kansas City. So it's just, there are so many really interesting storylines in the AFC, and I know both of us will be following along. And like I said, I'd love to have you on again soon, man. Great work, and like thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, appreciate you too, man.
Awesome. Zach Hicks there of SI, covers the Colts and Cover One. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, as well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.